This is a Pinball News production.
Well, I'd like to thank all you guys for coming. I'm honored to be here and spend this time with you. I guess I'll start at the beginning. I grew up in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, where it's so flat you can watch your dog run away for 3 days. Got so cold one day while on a walk, my Yorkshire Terrier named Chainsaw got his tongue stuck to a stop sign pole. True story. Winnipeg's known for two things, cold weather and Slurpees, hence nurturing my first two loves. One, arcades, because they're plentiful and out of the cold, and two, Slurpees, which are awesome, but much tastier in Canada. Winnipeg has been the Slurpee cap of the world for 8 years running. All I really wanted growing up was to have my own arcade, complete with my own personal Slurpee machine. I'm here to tell you that sometimes dreams come true, and I'm going to share with you how this all came about. As far as my pinball collection, or my pinball addiction, the writing was pretty much on the wall when I was a young kid. I just didn't realize it yet. When my parents needed a babysitter, they dropped me off at a friend's house where the husband was a mechanical engineer. They had a bucket full of different sized ball bearings. They let me play with them once, and I was hooked. Some kids you can park in front of the TV. You can just park me in front of a bucket of ball bearings. I was mesmerized and captivated by the silver ball. Just literally the silver ball by itself. I think they even let me keep one. Imagine my excitement later in life when I actually got to have an actual machine built around my beloved silver ball. When I was old enough to play pinball on my own, not when I was tall enough, that was probably when I was one, but when I was old enough, that's all I wanted to do. Every chance I got, everywhere they had pinball, I was playing. My local bowling alley where I bowled with two other kids had a pinbot, represented here by a shot of my jackbot. As soon as my turn was over when I was bowling, or as soon as I could, I just need those up a little bit, Ron, because I'm mostly reading. Thanks. As soon as I could quickly chuck my bowling balls down the alley, I'd run to the pinball machine and try and get my game in before my next frame. Even though I wasn't very good back then, I rarely completed a game in time and left the other kids wondering why I even bowled with them at all. Why not just drop the front and play pinball and stop wasting their time? Pinball was also at the local skating rink, but since I wasn't getting chosen by the girls for couples skate, maybe because I was as tall as Andre the Giant, I was scrounging for change to make a quarter to fire up quick three balls of pinball. So this is a picture of my Slurpee machine. It's a 7-Eleven version, Canadian style. I had it installed in my game room. If the picture doesn't make it clear, I'm a Slurpee addict, and I used to drink several a day growing up. Later in life, the need for a Slurpee even made me late for a wedding. Mind you, it wasn't my wedding I was late for, because you really think I'd have a Slurpee machine in my house if it reminded my wife of me being late for the wedding? No. A good friend of mine from Vancouver actually drove a couple hours to my wedding in Seattle with a 2-liter Slurpee on ice, which was one of my most memorable wedding gifts. When we were kids, sometimes we'd ride our bikes for miles just to get to the nearest 7-Eleven. And in that time, many 7-Elevens had a pinball machine. For me, that game was whirlwind. The fan was blowing my prepubescent summer mustache all over the place. You know, summer mustache, summer here, summer there, summer there. I loved that local arcade. It was called the Pirates, or my local arcade was called the Pirates Den. You used to need a parent's signature to be in there if you're under 16. Guess it wasn't enough to be 6'6" if you still had a baby face. For some reason, my parents made the mistake of signing my permission slip. The arcade owner rewarded kids with tokens for A's on their report card. That's all the incentive I needed to get good grades. Stay in school, kids. You can win free tokens. Too late for that. Some people name their firstborn after someone. I plan on naming one room in my game room the Pirate's Den. The arcade I went to had about a half dozen pins, but for some reason Jurassic Park was my favorite. It was my game of choice, probably because I could win replays on it. That was important when my grades weren't that good and I wasn't winning too many free tokens. It's been a long time, but I'm still a little annoyed at an old buddy of mine from when we were playing some Jurassic Park together. At the conclusion of one of the games, I saw my beautiful last two digits of my score match up perfectly with the match numbers. I couldn't wait to hear that knock. You guys know what I'm talking about. My so-called friend hit the start button to start our next game before my credit had a chance to register. I was right pissed. Forget the fact that we had won other games through replay. Forget the fact that I know he didn't do it on purpose. Don't even worry about the fact that I now have Jurassic Park at home on free play when I can play whenever I want free of charge. Those things aren't important. What's important is that I was deprived of a very special sound. A sound so powerful you can feel it. A sound that can change the way you feel about yourself, at least for a while. It's that immediate, very positive feedback that we all crave. It's as if the game is saying, you're good enough, you're strong enough, and gosh darn it, pinball people like you. When he carelessly, prematurely started that game, he did not allow for my well-earned, hard-fought, totally lucky 1 in 10 chance to happen. He didn't just take away 50 cents from me. He took away something I can never get back. The infinite possibility of greatness that my next game could have become. Who knows? It could have been my great white buffalo. Maybe it could have been a PB. You know, peanut butter personal best. Could have got a super jackpot. System failure wizard mode, or maybe even a world record. I could have gotten my initials in the machine for eternity, or maybe just for the rest of that week. Could have had a huge crowd gathering around me, cheering me on. So what if there are only two other people in the arcade besides me? My backstabbing, match-jealous friend took that away from me. He was never really my BFF. He was more like an FCLC, you know, a friend because he lived close. You guys probably had a few of them. You know, convenience. There were plenty of people in the attached mall who could have been come running when they heard the call. Possible kill screen coming up. Or, I mean, possible Jurassic Park ridiculous score happening. Maybe even some girls would have come to watch. I wanted to teach my friend the new meaning of the word term kill screen when he did that. So if it wasn't for him, I could have become famous, turned pro, made money from playing a game I loved in front of 20,000 screaming fans. Wait, I'm getting carried away. I can't really blame him for that last part. But instead, you know, all I'm saying is I could have been a contender, could have been a somebody. Instead, I'm a Jurassic Park bum. But that's all over now. It's in the past. I'm over it. I found success and happiness in my family and another venture. As for the friend who committed this terrible crime, we're cool. We've just barely spoken since that incident 15 years ago, and he remains to this day the only person I've ever been in a fist fight with. Coincidence, you decide, but we're cool now, I think. Right now, winning a match isn't as important as it used to be, as everything at home is on free play. But if we find ourselves, you and I, playing in the wild, pinball wild, where it's kill or be killed, think twice before chopping off the head of my masterpiece before it begins. Don't rob me the sweetest sound there is, and ever will be. So this is my buddy Ron at my place. As you can see, I'm a tall gentleman. And once when I was a kid, I was at the swimming pool, and I was probably close to the height I am now. And a kid about 6 years old comes up to me and says, hey, how tall are you? I said, I'm 7 feet. He's like, that's nothing. I know a guy who's 7'4". And I thought, wow, I thought I knew all the tall guys in this city. Who's 7'4"? He said, Todd McCulloch. I said, that's me. He's like, nope, this guy's 7'4". You just said you're 7 feet. I said, no, buddy, that's me. I don't have my ID. We're at the pool. And he's like, oh, yeah? What number do you wear? And I'm thinking, does he mean freshman year? Does he mean varsity? I'm 50. And he's like, nope, that's not it. I'm like, it's 50. He's like, no, I've been to the guy's house. It's 62 right on the backboard. I said, that's my address. My dad painted it on there. And he's like, oh, yeah? Who's your driver's ed instructor? I said, Mrs. McIsaac. He goes, yeah, that's my mom. I guess that's you. All right. Well, thank you for that. So being this height, you hear some crazy things from people. One guy said to me, you play basketball? And I said, no, do you play mini golf? I was in line at a cafeteria, and this guy turns back expecting to see my chest, and or expecting to see my face, and he looks up. He's like, whoa, you should wear a cowbell so you don't sneak up on people. I thought that was cute. My friend Bill Winnington, who used to play for the Bulls, who's almost my height, people would say to him, yeah, I thought I was tall. He'd say, yeah, I thought I was ugly. I was doing a talk with some kids, and a little kid came up to me at the end. He was just a little guy. And I said, hey, what's up, my man? And he looked at me and he's like, how did you know my name? And I said, it's right there on your name tag. And he wasn't wearing one. He looked down and he looked at me all confused and he walked away. I'm like, that was weird. A few minutes later, his sister comes up and says, how did you know my brother's name? I said, I didn't. I just said, what's up, my man? She said, oh, his name is Miman, M-I-M-A-N. So that was kind of weird. I used to play a high level of hockey when I was a kid. It's a shame I couldn't have made it to the hockey big leagues. I could have become the Canadian Bo Jackson. Let's face it, how many 7 feet, 7 foot four with skates, 7'8" with the afro, that's a Fletch reference, hockey players you see, not that many. I guess it's not that different from me playing professional pinball. I mean, professional pinball. It's not like you see a lot of 7 foot pinball players in the pinball circuit either. I guess I'm not really a two-sport pro after all. But I call myself pro because I've made a little bit of money playing pinball. Not anywhere near what I spent to get to the tournaments, but that's beside the point. If you then deduct the amount I've spent on the machines that I have to practice on at home, I become a horrible return on my pinball investment. My biggest payday so far was at Chicago Expo, where I won $360. Not enough for a dollar a day for a year, even less in a leap year. And I blew most of it that night on two very expensive shots that I shared, one with Keith Johnson, the pinball programmer who's a rules genius, a great player, and a hell of a nice guy. I once won $52 Canadian at a Vancouver League event. That's the only time I've ever come in first at a tournament. Total haul was $52, but 10 of that had to go to the engraver because it was up to me to engrave the trophy before the next one. But that's a small price to pay for immortality. Won $17 at an Ironman pinball tournament, but since it was downtown in Seattle, parking cost me $20. Average cost of airfare to attend an out-of-town pinball tournament, $300. Average hotel cost for the stay, $250. Average cost of having to tip the airport park and fly attendant who returned my second place electromechanical trophy from the Texas Pinball Festival after I left it in their bathroom, $20. Cost of displaying the trophy on my mantle after thoroughly disinfecting it, priceless. Once I get around to naming part of my game room, the Pirate's Den, after my local arcade, I want to name another part, Jungle Jim's. Jungle Jim's was the name of an arcade in Regina, Saskatchewan. You heard me correctly. I said Saskatchewan. The city's called Regina. Can you believe that? Somebody actually named it that. My dad and I used to visit the poorly named place on out-of-town hockey tournaments. Anyway, some of the fathers were nice enough to take their sons to this local, rapidly becoming legendary arcade. And my dad wasn't a huge fan of my penchant for coin-eating machines. And because it wasn't within walking distance, I could never go there on my own. Instead, he wanted to spend quality time with me sipping hot chocolate and playing cards. Stuff like that doesn't get you anywhere in life. Now, gaming, that's taken me places. Like having the chance to be up here in front of you guys. Some fine individuals. So all I ever heard about from my teammates was how fun it was at Jungle Gyms. I pictured a hall like the one here at PPE, where everything was free. Probably 100 different Slurpee flavors flowing like a geyser. It's probably a river of chocolate like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory running through this place. In reality, it was probably more like a room with a Gottlieb 911, a broken flipper, and a knockoff Robotron called Bobotron. But having never seen it for myself, it's always remained a mysterious, wonderful void which represents all the possibilities and wonders of my dream arcade. So maybe in some small way, my game room now is an attempt to put together the best Jungle Gyms that I can imagine right in my own home. Or maybe I've had too many brain freezes in my life and my circuitry's been fried. Nevertheless, I don't know this Jungle Gym and his arcade, so I should probably name mine Tickle Todd's or something like that. College was a great time for me. I had accepted a scholarship to play NCAA Division I basketball at the University of Washington. Things were going really well for me personally, emotionally, game-playingly. Things were, later I met my best friend, who later became my wife, Jana. I made some lifelong friends and teammates, freshman floor mates. Many of the guys in the dorms were really active in the gaming community. Basketball, that was another story. I was pretty out of shape. Too much gaming. Pinball doesn't give you a whole lot of cardiovascular rewards. A beat writer who followed the team once described me as moving up and down the court with the grace of an unplugged refrigerator. I wanted to leave him a new definition of the term beat writer. I found solace in the local arcades where my new college friends and I, we bonded over a shared love of pinball. In one instance, my good friend Jason, who can't be here with us today, he's fine. He just has a job interview, so he couldn't be here, deposited quarters into a Dadies pinball machine. Swallowed his money. He's just a small guy, 6'7", 240. But he did his best to beat that money out of the machine. Didn't work, he exclaimed. You gotta be joking! The game, with perfect timing, responded, do I look like I'm joking? My little friend looked like he'd seen a ghost, and I decided to keep quiet about the fact that I was a commonly heard track mode line, but I decided to not to tell him and have him figure it out. I had three good dorm friends. They took their gaming very seriously, their console gaming seriously. They worked through games and shifts, two men playing while another man slept for 8 hours, and then they'd rotate. So after 2 years in the dorms, four of us moved into an apartment. We called ourselves the United Nations. I'm Canadian, one guy was Filipino, one guy was German, and one guy was American. Gaming was the common language that brought us all together. Okay, the language barrier that I faced coming from north of the border was not all that difficult. I just had to drop my A's and change my about to about. Oh yeah, I also had to denounce Brian Adams and Celine Dion, but I was fine with that because that was actually my idea. Like I said, we took our gaming seriously. Our game room at the time was comprised of just two TVs and every console system available. The room was carpeted, but the attached bathroom was not. So rules stated that you'd lose your turn, be out of the rotation, if you didn't keep at least 1 foot on the carpeted area. That made using the facilities a bit of a challenge. I'd say more of a problem for my vertically challenged Filipino roommate than for me and my 7-foot German roommate. Mario Kart 64, that was a big hit. I got such joy out of shelling my German roommate repeatedly, every chance I got. It was a highlight of my day. The madder he got, the funnier it was to me. He tried to institute a no laughing rule after trying to tell me, "Not funny!" That just made it more funny to me. No laughing in Mario Kart, I mean, that's like squeezing all the fun out of me. If you're going to take the fun out, might as well throw the console right out the window. My folks live on Vancouver Island, and it's a 2-hour ferry ride from the mainland, but have no fear, entertainment of the highest form was near. The ferry had a medieval madness pin in a small game room on the boat, even better was some schmuck must have made the mistake of putting the replay at 5 million. I thought I was going to win replays the whole way across. It's normally about 27 million on that game. So I thought I'd pay once and play the rest of the time. Boy, was I wrong. I had to pump in fresh money every 2 minutes for the whole two-hour crossing. Didn't win a single replay. Whenever the boat shifted, the ball immediately drained on the corresponding out lane. It was comical. I think the game operator and the ferry captain must have been in cahoots. Captain was driving that boat all over the place because it seemed like he rocked that baby side to side the whole way across. So I've started a coalition to ban pinball machines from being played on moving surfaces, and if you guys will take a chance to sign that on the way out, that'd be great if you share my concern. I finally ran out of money, noticed a young kid. He thought he was playing a video game next to me. It was just the attract mode. So he repeatedly would every time the attract mode would end, the hero would suffer a similar fate and die, and the kid would say, "Man, I always die there." Which, when you think about it, it's not that different from playing a typical video game, you know, even when you're in control. But I shouldn't give video games a hard time, you know, because you kind of say the same thing about pinball. I can point between the two flippers and say, "I always die there." I ended up graduating with a degree in speech and hearing sciences from the University of Washington. And after that, I decided I'd apply for an MBA program. But on my application, the M looked more like an N, and I ended up applying the NBA, and the Sixers gave me a call. So that worked out pretty good. Next thing you know, I'm coached by a Hall of Famer, Larry Brown. He had some Hall of Fame lines for me. "Dodd, you look like you're running in mud. Dodd, you can't wear black shoes anymore. You look so slow when you run in black shoes. Only white for you, buddy." Told me I only had one speed, and that was super slow. Told me I wasn't allowed to have any ice cream. That was always nice. And at one point, he's like, "Dodd, you run like that old bear in that shooting game. You just, you know, that bear that just runs back and forth like this, runs back and forth like this. You run like that old bear." And I can only imagine he was talking about shoot the bear. I have that game now. Just like Coach said, the bear moves predictably and slowly, just like I did. So it's easy to hit. So I'm glad the similarities ended there, as I wouldn't like a dog chasing after me on the court. But instead, I had bigger, stronger guys chasing after me, trying to foul me. Well, at least nobody was pointing a rifle at me while I was out there, although some fans in Philadelphia probably wanted to at times. So I go to Philadelphia when I first get there, and I don't have any friends, and my fiance hasn't come with me yet. So I get in there, and I'm just looking around, and the manager is playing. He's playing a basketball game with real players at the time. And he's like, "Man, the Sixers suck." And I go, "Hey, you watch your mouth," because I'd just been drafted. And he looked at me like, "Why is this guy talking to me?" And I keep looking at games, and he goes, "Man, I got to sub out Iverson. I got to put somebody else in." I say, "Hey, why don't you put me in for him?" He's looking at me like, "Why is this guy talking to me?" So I come around. He's like, "You're pretty tall. Do you play at Drexel or St. Joe's?" I said, "No, I'm going to play for the Sixers this year." And he's like, No, you're not. I said, "Yeah, I am." And so I had to show him my ID. He's like, "Dude, you're Big Mac. Check this out. You're in this new game. I'm going to sub you in." He puts me in. I turn the ball over, and I get subbed out of the game. I'm like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I can't control it, Coach Brown. You've been overridden. You had a turnover. You're out of the game." So that was kind of a tough way to see yourself in cyberspace. I played once Dreamcast against my buddy. We played Sixers white jerseys versus Sixers black jerseys. The rules were you had to play with my character, shoot threes, and it took till the third quarter. I was 1 for 49 before I finally hit a three, which is bullcrap because I can shoot threes better than that game says that I can. One of my first games as a New Jersey Net, I was in position to make 2 free throws to seal the victory for my team. We were in Boston playing the Celtics. High above me, a Boston fan by the name of Bowen Cairns, now a multiple pinball world champion and close personal friend, was heckling me and yelling at me while I stood at the line. Mind you, he was not alone in this verbal attack. I'm at my place of work. What makes him think it's okay to do that? I don't know him yet. I don't like him yet. We aren't friends yet. Do I go to his place of work? Quiet room in his home where he writes math textbooks and yell and heckle him? "You're never going to get that textbook done on time. It's not going to be as good as your last one. You can't even add." I would never do that. But somehow it's okay for him and 20,000 other Boston fans to do that to me, where I'm just trying to provide for my family. It's okay. Made the shots, spite of him, and we won the game. He also later used my first name and actual dismal free throw percentage in one of his math textbooks. So I end up getting my 15 minutes of fame, thanks to him. Thank you, Bowen, for making me tougher mentally, both with your taunts and your wonderfully laid out math textbooks with me in them. Soon after I first met Bowen, I was doing radio for the 76ers as a color analyst. He picked me up at my hotel in Boston right before a game that I was going to be working. He drove us to Gorham, Maine for a long night of pinball. Long night of pinball heaven at a guy named John Reuters, JR. He's got roughly 60 pins set up at any given time. Needless to say, I was pretty much doo-doo on the radio that night as we got back about 4 or 5 a.m. My radio partner was not pleased, and he commented later, my energy level was terrible, and it was like I wasn't even there. I guess I really wasn't. I was somewhere between La La Land and wishing I was back at JR's playing those pinball machines. But that was just the beginning of some shenanigans I forced my radio partner to endure. One time we were calling a game against the Houston Rockets, and Yao Ming runs right by us. The guy's big. He's 6 inches taller than me, and my radio partner says, Todd, look at his legs. And I said, what, are you hitting on the guy, Tom? He's like, no, look how big they are. I said, yeah, Tom, they're really big. Tom, you've seen the movie A Christmas Story, right? You guys all seen it? Christmas Story and 24 Hours a Day on TBS? He says, nope, never seen it. I am dumbfounded that someone hasn't seen that movie. So I'm just dead air, and he's like, go on, what's your point? I'm like, well, Tom, in the movie there's this leg lamp, and if it's really big and if it was modeled after Yao Ming's, it would be a really big leg. He's like, can we get back to the game? I'm like, I'm going to get fired. What the hell am I talking about? But my friends texted me later, dude, the leg stuff was hilarious. So one time he was talking about, oh, the Sixers had a bad quarter and all they could muster was 6 points. I said, that's all they could muster and now they have to catch up. He said, oh, Kahneman humor, great. So Sean Bradley is also taller than me, 6'7", 6", fell down, but he kind of, boom, fell to his knees and then boom, fell to his hands and just took forever. I've never seen someone fall that slowly. It's like, Tom, it's like you need a 3-part miniseries to see him go down on that. Tom said somebody got mauled on a play. I'm like, Tom, I didn't think the foul was that bad. It was just more of a mini maul, you know? It wasn't that bad. We were having shot clock problems, and so we're trying to kill time while we're trying to fix this. Tom's like, yeah, we're having intermittent problems with the shot clock. And I said, yeah, high of 24, low of 0. I'd guess that many of you know who Clay Harrell is. I think he might be here over by the water. A.K.A. Shaggy from the This Old Pinball series. We had some really good times together, haven't we, Clay? Here's a couple of the not-so-great times. Clay was nice enough to spend some time with me during the playoffs one year while I was doing radio for Philadelphia. Sixers were playing Detroit in the opening round of a best-of-seven series. I got to spend a lot of time in Clay's amazing, diverse game room. Turned out to be a little too much time spent in Clay's game room. While enjoying his awesome games, Clay asked me how long before the night's playoff game, how soon before the game did I need to be there. And I'd gotten his family tickets to the game, and I knew he probably didn't want to get there hours early. So I said, if you get me there an hour before, that'll be cutting it kind of close, but we could probably pull it off. He said, great, we'll leave at such and such a time. So after a leisurely stop at Boston Market on the way, because he was hungry, we hit some traffic, and Clay delivered me to the arena about 6 minutes before tip-off of the playoff game. So my radio partner was well into the pregame show that I was supposed to be co-hosting. So I say to Clay, thank you for that. I'm glad you enjoyed your turkey carver sandwich and 3 delicious sides. That's what's important, not my employment and my new second dream job. I got my revenge, though, accidentally, of course. One day while staying at Clay's, I had some business to take care of on the commode. Instead of his next video being called This Old Pinball, it could be called This Old Toilet Seat, because there's no way that little circle was up to code. Just one teeny little side shift under me, and it's split in half like a fault line in earth shaker. Guess I should have turned off my shaker motor before I sat down. This side of the toilet seat went up, this side went down. Left a nice pinch mark, too. I should have sued him, but my mom always told me to turn the other cheek. Clay always tells his game room guests, if you break something like a game, just let me know. I won't be mad. I just want to know. So I asked him if the toilet seat snappage fell into the same request. Anyway, Clay was having a party soon after. So in front of everyone, he whips out my broken toilet seat and asks me to sign it. He's written on it, Todd McCulloch's ass broke this seat. So I sign it, and he puts it up on the wall like a trophy. He didn't have any other trophies. So he mounted it up there like some moose head he'd bagged. Real classy, Detroit. Clay once made a service call to Coach Larry Brown's house while he was coaching the Pistons. Coach wasn't home, but I'm pretty sure Clay wouldn't have recognized him even if he was. So later he tells me, he's like, oh, went to this guy's house and went downstairs in the game room. He had all these pictures on the wall, you know, like him with Michael Jordan and all these great players, you know, some old guy standing next to him. Said he had a bunch of framed jerseys, all these guys. Said there were jerseys of Jordan, Pippen, Ewing, Barkley. Said, wait. Back up. Did you just say Ewing? Patrick Ewing. It's Patrick Ewing, smart guy. So that's like me getting up here and playing tribute to all the pinball greats. Pat Lawler, Brian Eady, Stev Raichi, Jorge Gomes. It's not right. Can't be tolerated. Clay likes to give me a hard time whenever he can. Sometimes I deserve it. I don't try to fix my own games anymore, and here's why. I was trying to replace a photo cell in one of my old gun games. I removed the paper and casing on the part, and after the very next shot, it completely shorted out. Clay asked me what I did. I said, all I did was take off the flypaper. He said, there's your problem right there. That was supposed to stay on to prevent the short, and it's fish paper, not fly paper. He commented the next time I was feeling MacGyver, I should probably wait for backup. It's only been one time I can remember that Clay was asking me for help with something. When he crashed in my place, I supplied him with a bed of which he could inflate. Maybe it was way past his bedtime, but he looked perplexed. He asked me how it worked and if I could help him set it up. I was flattered to be able to actually help my buddy, the mighty Shaggy. I might suggest that he do his next video on inflation, and I can help him out with it. Not the monetary kind of inflation. It'll be a short video. Plug cord extending from bed into electrical outlet. Turn valve to on position. Unplug when firm. Count sheet. He can answer most of your game questions, sprawling decades of knowledge, but just don't ask him the age-old dilemma of how to put air into something. Like Clay, I've had the chance to meet some other great people in this hobby. For example, Rick Prince. He's not here today either, but when I was in Philadelphia, I was seeking out every pinball machine that I could find, and a guitar store had a funhouse. So I went there to play, and as I'm playing, I realized I want to talk pinball with the guitar shop owner as much as I want to play. It's a social thing, and I want to talk pinball. He doesn't really know me. He's like, look, that's not even my game. My friend Rick is sick. He's got 15 of them in the house. He doesn't have room, so I'm just storing it for him. And I said, 15 games? Does he live close? I said, what games does he have? He said, I don't know. Do you want me to call him? There's no other customers in the store. So he calls up Rick. Rick, some tall dude's in here, wants to know what pinball machines you have. Rick wants to talk pinball. He's got this one. I'm like, oh, I have that one. I got this one. I have that one, too. We go down the list, and we share about 13 of 15 titles. And I'm like, this guy sounds awesome. He's like me. And so Rick's always looking to play pinball. He's like, do you guys want to come? The guy's like, well, I got to work. I'm at the shop, but how about you, tall guy? Do you want to go to Rick's? I'm like, I would love to go to Rick's and play pinball. So he gives me directions. I go around the corner. Rick's standing on his lawn going, hi, I'm the Rick guy. I'm Rick. And we get out. We go down to his game room. We start playing. Basically fall in love. We're just playing for hours. He's way better than me, knows way more about the machines than I ever will. And at the end of it, I was like, wow, I've really enjoyed this. Why don't you come to my house tomorrow and we'll do this all again? And we've pretty much been great friends ever since. So I called him up to go on a road trip because I wanted to go pick up a game. So you need a buddy on a road trip. So he said, that's fine. Just don't make me drive the truck. I said, no, I'll rent the truck. I'll drive the truck. You're just my partner. So we get to the Penske truck place, and I said, I cannot even drive this thing. It's right in my knee. I'm like, Rick, I'm sorry, buddy. You have to drive. I don't fit. So he's like, all right, so I'll drive. So I go to sit in the passenger side, but I can't even put my knees in like this. So I have to sit this way with my knees in the middle while he's driving. So basically the whole trip was me just staring at his face like for 4 hours. Jerry's like, what's up, dude? He's like, kind of freaking me out. So it was just kind of a long road trip, and it's pinball friends like that make it a little more better. I had a friend that was staying at my place, and he used to like going and play Monster Bash. It was right next to this, but Rudy's eyelids were all jacked up, and his eyes were off in the corner, so Rudy was just staring at him the whole time. So he had to stop playing Monster Bash and go upstairs. I went to Graceland one time when we were playing the Memphis Grizzlies. I thought my chances were slim, but I wanted to meet Elvis there. I heard he owned a couple of pinball machines, and I thought he might be a pretty cool guy. He must not have been home, though, because I didn't see him. He's probably a cool guy because wherever he was, he seemed okay with having all these people just walk around his house. I wanted to ask if it was okay if I played his pinball machines, but I couldn't find him. So I decided to just jump over the rope and put some money in some of his pinball machines. Some of his worker bees took offense to me trying to do that, but I thought they'd be okay with it because it seemed like the place was all about money. They call it Graceland, but I don't feel like they showed me a whole lot of grace there. I made my way back to the gift shop thinking they might have a Stern Elvis pinball machine in the lobby, but they didn't, so I left. One time I was cruising RGP and saw a thread about Whitewater and started talking to this guy who lived in the next area, a city where I was headed on a road trip. So we started talking, and I love Whitewater, and I said, if you want, I can get you tickets to a game. He said, that's great. Why don't you come over? We'll play my Whitewater. We'll bond. We'll do pinball things. I said, that sounds awesome. And he writes me back or talks to me on the phone and says, you know what, I told my wife that I had invited over I try and tell her there's totally normal, cool people on this news group, and it'll be perfectly fine, but my wife's just feeling a little iffy about you coming over with, you know, I got a family. And so I said, look, it's unconditional. You got the tickets. I don't want to cause any family distress, so whatever. He said, let me work on her. And I came back and said, you know, you can Google me or see some of the charitable work I've done or see that I'm not a crackhead. And he came back and said, yeah, now that she knows you're a professional athlete, she's actually less interested in having you come over. So I thought, oh, that's really nice. So I ended up going over there. We had a great time. After dinner, she locked herself in the room upstairs, and we just played pinball. So it all went great. I have tried quite unsuccessfully to get other NBA players hooked on pinball. For whatever reason, they just don't seem to get bit by the bug. Maybe it's better that way because they'd probably end up buying up all the games if they did get hooked. I thought I'd seen an episode of Cribs one time where it appeared that Shaquille O'Neal had a fishtail machine in his basement. I thought I saw it briefly in the background of the program. Surely Shaq loved pinball. I mean, he had his own game, Shaq Attack, named after him. That's all the ammo I thought I needed. I saw him in a hotel lobby, and I'd approached him and thought I'd start what would be a lengthy, bond-forming, unforgettable discussion about our shared love of pinball. We discuss our intertwined pinball futures together. This is sort of how I saw the conversation happening in my head, and this is actually what went down. Hey, Shaq. I said that part. That was me. I says, hey, Shaq, didn't I see on Cribs a while ago you had a fishtails pinball machine in your game room? He replied, no, I don't. Yeah, it was about like that. It was dead awkward silence. Sound of crickets came out of nowhere. Do you have any idea how awkward it is when 2 7-footers who share a profession have nothing to say to each other? It became supersized awkward. I didn't see it playing out that way. I thought he'd say, yeah, I love pinball. You know, I have a game named after me, right? I'd say, yeah, of course I know that. It's not that good. It's not my favorite, but you're bigger than me, which is kind of strange, so I'm not even going to say that. And he'd say, you know, I heard you're a great pinball player. You know, maybe you could help me make the next one. Shaq Attacks again. Maybe we can make it even better. And I said, of course. It's guaranteed to be better. Then we'd agree to meet up at PPE 2010. I haven't seen him yet, though. Have you guys? He can be pretty easy to miss. I mean, it's a big haul. It's only Sunday. Let's give him some time. Meanwhile, back on Earth, in the hotel lobby, now magically infested with crickets, I realized I'd blown my big chance. I walked up to my room, saddened by the unformed bond that Shaq and I never had a chance to grow. Recently on vacation, a waiter asked me how tall I am. I said, 6'11 and 13/16". He exclaimed, man, you're huge! Like I'm not constantly reminded of that by an over-observant public daily. He continued, you're so big, man, I bet you could guard Shaq. I politely told him that he should not make that bet, that I cannot guard Shaq at all, and I wasn't being hypothetical. I knew 100% for a fact that I cannot guard Shaq. This has been proven in a public forum, and the evidence is now a matter of public record on ESPN Classic. There's only one former NBA player that I was successful at converting into a pinball fan. His name is Josh Davis. His wife's name is Jess Davis. This is important. It's important. Rocky Mountain Pinball Showdown, they made the announcement that they were going to have this EM tournament coming up. And so I asked my friend Josh, hey, I'm going to go sign up. It's $5. I'll put you in. And then just not to be rude, I just thought I would ask his wife, Jess, do you want me to sign you up too? She said, no, you're just going to waste your money. I said, Jess, it's $5. I'm signing you up. She's like, okay. So I sign us all up. We play. I win. Josh loses. Jess wins. She would just step up to these, you know, middle-aged gentlemen. She's small and really cute, and guys would say, so how you play a lot of pinball? Nah, I've been to my friend Todd's house once or twice, and they're like, good, awesome, I'm going to beat you. And then she'd just crush him. She's shaking the machine. She's sliding it, beating him. They're like, not happy with her. So we end up, she makes it all the way. We end up in the third place game, and I'm thinking, I got this, you know. I know she's only been to my house a couple times. I know I got this. But she ended up kicking my ass, and she won the third place, but I'm pretty sure that this is the only time in any competition anywhere. Actually, I forgot to mention they had their 8-week-old baby with them in a stroller they were pushing around, and so at that time she was in charge of the baby. So the only time that an actual live human baby has been passed back and forth between dueling combatants as they alternated turns. I lost badly. Not a smart move on her part, as I still had possession of her baby while she ran up the score on me on our last ball. You always got to be thinking about your children's futures when you're playing pinball. She finished third, became the 288th highest-ranked player in the world. Whatever, I'm 123rd right now. Pretty sure I'm number one in your hearts. I tried to get my wife hooked on pinball, and that hasn't worked out so well. Looking back, there may have been a couple instances where I could have used better judgment to facilitate and foster her pinball courtship at a vulnerable time. There was a time I had games delivered to the house on her birthday. What did you get me that needed to come in a truck? Is that truck for me? No, honey, that truck's for me. She said, it's not making a birthday delivery? I said, yeah, it is. It's just 8 months and 6 days early. I was playing a hell of a game on Medieval Madness one day down in my basement, much like the game I was going to have in Jurassic Park before my buddy had taken it away from me. My wife opened up the door to the basement stairs and asked if I wouldn't mind coming up for a moment. I told her I was in the middle of a big game and couldn't come up just then. She could tell I was distracted, and she offered a normally fair compromise. Okay, do you mind trapping the ball for a minute so we can talk and you can focus? Although I totally appreciated her grasping of an important pinball concept, I replied, sorry, babe, no can do. I'm in a time mode. Can't stop now. That was the wrong answer. I know that now. Took me putting the shoe on the other foot to figure out that maybe pinball was just not going to be her thing. That's okay. My wife loves to quilt. While I appreciate her talent, creativity, and her beautiful finished products, I have zero interest in sitting down for hours and quilting alongside her. So maybe her pinball is like my quilting. I've pretty much dropped the hard sell. So now my efforts are focused on turning my 2.5-year-old daughter into a lifetime pinball player. I've recorded dates of many of her first pinball milestones, first mode start, skill shot, mode ramp, made ramp. Forget her first steps. I'm waiting for her first wizard mode completion. This is a game called They're Off. I don't know why I bought it. I like horse racing games. It's not bad. The gameplay's not that great, but she loves this game. She loves the coin slide it has. She drops nickels in the slide. I push it in. She has no interest in playing the game. She just wants to pump nickels into it. I'm trying to figure out how this could be fun for her, or anybody for that matter. Why would anybody want to put money into a machine to just see it disappear? And then it hit me. I realized I do exactly the same thing every time I play a slot machine. Money goes in, and then more money goes in. I think it might be time to back off pushing coin up on my daughter. Like I said, she's only 2.5. She's starting to think that since coins go into pretty much everything that daddy owns, that coins must fit into everything she owns. There's my slot machine. She's practically choked her Elmo to death on several occasions by trying to shove quarters down his throat.
Elmo never liked that.
Yoda suffered a similar fate.
Strong you are, and the change is strong in you.
My brother likes the game somewhat. Probably he likes the EM stuff a little more than pinball. He loves Whirlybird. He currently has the house high score, but I don't think it should count, seeing as he's he has his pilot's license for airplanes and helicopters. So Whirlybird represents another example of why I don't try to fix my games anymore. My techs were working to fix the counterweight on Whirlybird. It was a tad off. It looked like they pretty much had nailed it, and they asked me to test it the Todd way. That man, I decided it was enough for the propeller to not just touch the game, the ceiling under normal play. I needed to satisfy myself that even if I bounced it hard, it wouldn't rebound up too high. I tried and tried and tried, and finally I did it. I found the optimum meshing of throttle and bounce, and the helicopter shot up to the top of the game, shattered the propeller into a million pieces. I had answered my question about the counterweight setting, but that led to another question I had asked myself. Why the hell did I do that again? My tech said, you know what, let us take it from here. I turned in my wings, soldering iron like Cougar from Top Gun. The whole thing had my flawed logic all over it. What I did with Whirlybird is like someone saying, you know, someone like myself, for example, I wonder how hard I'd have to hit my headlight with a crowbar until it breaks. And then when it breaks, go, oh, I guess you needed to hit it that hard. That's it. Thanks very much. I'll show you some images of my game room, and if we have time, maybe watch a couple of videos. I'm just going to flip through a few slides here first, Ron. So this is the upstairs in the, we have a separate game room house building, and this is Ron's wife, Lucy, up in the media room. Some of the old stuff, I guess I do have a laser pointer stuff. So we got the Whirlybird. This is a Batascore. This is a Bally racetrack. We got Goalie. This is a more modern Bowlerama. And then you got your basketball champ, Keeney Air Raider. This is that racetrack, and it's a betting game. So you pull out this little side. They're trying to be a little inconspicuous. This is where the money comes out. And you just really, for some reason, like horse racing games. And, of course, being a basketball player, I don't necessarily buy games just because they're basketball, but the ones that are fun, I've tried to gravitate to. So that one's kind of a fun game. Like I said, I love horse racing games. I just had this image in my head from being in Japan many years ago about all these fun games they had. And the ones that are straight ahead are cool, but I always had this vision of an oval track. And this one came up, and I had to jump on it. I've had lots of issues, but it's currently working, and it's a lot of fun. I have actually, if we get to it, I have a short video of it. I like shuffleboard, but I didn't want to take up a whole room, a whole wall of 18 feet of pinballs that would be lost, so I got a bank shuffle that takes up less room, and it's still fun to play shuffle. My daughter loves it. This is in the basement of the house on the far side of the fireplace where I've got some pins and a couple other things, slot machine in the corner. Joust is kind of fun head-to-head. This is the spare bedroom downstairs, so if you're a guest and you just want to wake up, you can just get up and play pinball. So at first, my wife wasn't thrilled about that part of the equation, but it's working out pretty well. This is a 1968 Mustang Fastback. This is a game called Magic Baseball that's pretty cool. If we get to it, I have a short video of it. Some puck games. I like roll-down games, things where you're actively doing something, whether you're throwing a puck or rolling a ball. Most of my games, I like to try and have at least two players, so those are. And this is Ron Chan and myself and my son Dylan. He's a future gamer. Ron is very tall in that picture. This is a game called Mutascope Ace Bomber from 1941. It's a rare game, and a lot of the metal was corroded because during that time they were using all the metal for war efforts, and so it was made of pot metal, but a few of them have been saved, and there was a beautiful restoration done on that. Cool pitching bat. This is a Bally Alley. That's a lot of fun. Midget Alley, official baseball, batter up, stunt car. This is a view of the lower room with just some games, space flight, flying turns, and raceway. It's a pitch ball. Then these are, I'm not huge on the older pins, but I do like back glass animation. I really like these cars that go around. I like the fact that you're getting laps rather than points, and I find those a lot of fun for an older game. This is a game I picked up on eBay. When it lights draw, you just got to be the first to hit your button. You play best of three. We put down some money and had some tournaments, just a quickness. The games go really quick. It's a lot of fun. And being Canadian, you got to have the bubble hockey. That was a game that I grew up playing, and I just love dome hockey. I realized after looking at Clay's site, he talked about these mannequin games, and I find them really appealing, and there a lot of collectors like them. I realized later that that hockey, you know, was basically a mannequin game before I even knew what a mannequin game was, and I think that's part of the appeal and why they're still making those games. Space Flight, this was a tough one to get going, seeing as I don't know how to get anything going. So I ended up getting four of them to try and make one work, and actually that one doesn't work now either, but it will at some point. This is the main floor where all the big stuff goes, air hockey, and if I can get to it, I got a video of this one. You guys have all seen air hockey. So that's where the big stuff goes that is on ground level. That's a bowl-o-rama. It's an 18-foot long bowl-o-rama. That's a lot of fun. Ski ball is fun, but I like games to be multiplayer, so I waited to find a four-player one so you can take turns. Bowling. I'm not big on the shuffle pucks when you've got a big ball bowler, so some of these puck games were unique. This is a Williams doubleheader, United fifth inning, shuffle target. That's a lot of fun. There's a gunfighter with myself and Lucy. This is not a cocktail cabinet. That's actually a normal size video game cabinet, and that's the perspective I see. I do have a video on that, too. That's what I have to do in order to see the screen. I love these. These are great. I had a seat all. This is me in a normal Daytona, and then I had that one altered to give me a little more room so I could be a little more comfortable. And then, Ron, can you hit the, or you just hit play on the video, and we'll see how many we get through.
Maybe 5 minutes.
5 minutes. They're about 30 seconds each. So this is 1937 Rockola World Series. It's a beautiful game, and not only a runner on first and third.
Okay,
another double.
I'd like to try.
A lot of you have seen it maybe at the Musée Mécanique.
Doubles, just trying to be consistent.
I got up somehow. In my room and it really draws
two men on second. Well, that's not
a great looking game. That's a lot of fun.
This is probably
it's really challenging too, and you can't really tell from this angle, but the balls cascade down, and they keep track of balls and strikes and runs, and it's engineered in a really interesting way.
Oh, Damari, he gets me every time. He's quite an outfielder, that Damari. One out. Damari got me again every time. It's Damari. The guy doesn't drop anything. Oh, Gehringer bails him out.
Go.
So this is Bally Alley. 37, 39.
Put your hands in here like you're bowling.
Somewhere between.
Normal bowling, my fingers never fit
39.
The ball.
There's not too many
makes
of them
that sound
out
when I let go.
So there. It's really interesting. Nice you put your hand into what looks like a protrusion of the head of a bowling ball.
Got enough RPM
and you hold down the button. Spins the...
And
the ball with
many
RPMs
and the
wrist and switches the motor from AC to DC
to
AC
to
AC. Stops on a dime, but all the spin that you put on the ball causes it to roll down the alley. And it's supposed to hit these pins and it knocks them out of sight. And Clay's supposed to get me a leather thing that's supposed to hide them out of there. It's got a lot of projects going on. But it's just a beautiful game. It's a lot of fun to see the ball take the spin. You can kind of angle it and get kind of this pro curve. And underneath there's sort of a pair of pins and puts them back in place. It's got pin, I don't know if you call it pinhole, you know, projection scoring before score reel. So it's pretty old school, but really interesting. It makes kind of this cool whizzing sound by way of talking over it.
I put it right where I did last time. So once the ball spin stops, it comes back down. The game is six shots or three frames.
This is just a sweep of the still I showed you up in the media room. I always wanted one slot machine. I thought I wanted only one pinball machine when it started. And I went to a guy's place that had tons of slot machines, and in his room, that's the one that stood out to me. I mean, quite literally, it had a real presence to it. And so I bought it and then found out Rich DeLong, Butch DeLong. I think he may have been the guy who had carved it, and so we struck up a friendship, and I ended up getting two more made, and I think they really present themselves nicely, and they're a lot of fun to play. Yeah, so that's Basketball Champ. This is a cool game. Lucy and I are playing a game here called Cool Gunman, which is, you know, modern, but to me electromechanical, and just has these huge pop bumpers. When I was on the road doing radio, I had some time to kill, so I would go to these arcades midday and just be this middle-aged man by myself in arcades, and I'm trying to play this game by myself. It's pretty boring by yourself, but I just thought if I had a friend, if I had an opponent, this would probably be a lot of fun, and I ended up finding one. A lot of them were in Japan and needed to be imported, but I got one, and it's a huge hit at parties. Cheating right now. You can't use the gun as a goalie, but people often have, my brother does that too, really, really aggravates me. It's okay when Lucy does it. So you're not supposed to play goalie, but a huge hit at parties, you know, as soon as people get over the initial shock of this pop bumper going off. You know, you guys have all seen rows of pins. This is the my basement with some of my favorite titles. I had to get rid of some when I moved from Philadelphia, but these were sort of the ones that I decided to keep, and play them a lot when friends come over. Got two young kids. I'm trying to get my daughter into it. And maybe once or twice a year, I host Seattle Pinball League events where the league comes over to play, and we just have a great time playing all the different games. And there's a whole team of people that help keep things running. Plays one of them, a couple of local guys in Seattle, because I don't know how to fix anything, but they're just a great community in order to keep things running for the betterment of it. So this is where I spend a lot of time, just down in the basement. I put the pins there, and then the other stuff is pretty novel, and it's fun to look at. It's fun when other people come over to see, but like you guys know, we're all here for pinball, and it's just the most engaging, the most challenging, the most fun if you don't have anybody else around to play with. So I made a conscious decision to have them closer. You don't have to walk outside to play. So this is just a game room sweep of that lower level. You saw some stills of it. That's a Sega helicopter. There's not too many of those around. It's kind of like Whirlybird, but instead of touching things, you try and land your twin prop helicopter on the landing zone to get points. Block shot basketball, I think, is pretty fun. Ringer is really addictive. It doesn't look like much, but there's a nice mix of skill and luck. Like I said, I don't buy basketball games just because they're basketball games, but that one's a lot of fun. Instead of just waiting to shoot one ball around, there's a number of balls on that play field. There's always one in one of your spots to shoot. Batter up. Instead of using a ball bearing, it's actually a light-o-matic, and it's the ball is, look, it's a translucent play field, and the light appears like a ball. Ron's a big fan of the Williams 57 bowler. That's a lot of fun. So, you know, they're all, I go through phases where maybe this will be my favorite room because of the games, or maybe it just really changes. But I think if I go around with my friends or people that haven't been there, it might take 2.5 hours to play everything once, and some stuff we just have to skip, and I just have to pick out the most, you know, the most interesting things. That's fine, yeah. So thank you all for being here. I really, really appreciate it, and let's enjoy the rest of the show. Yeah.